Here we go again, just like the way it ended. The Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast is brought to you by LL Pavorsky Jewelers, where Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners go and get engaged. Big Barker Therapeutic Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of The Process. The Colony Meadery, the official gluten-free booze made from honey of The Process. And Kinetic Skateboard Shop. Get 9.1% off your first order with promo code Dave Silver. On the show tonight, the Sixers have played a basketball game, and boy oh boy, it seemed a lot like the basketball game that they just played to end the other season. So we will overanalyze a full Sixers game that we had of the regular season. Before we get started, you have until Thursday at midnight to join the Rights to Ricky Sanchez run team for the Providence Animal Center Bark in the Park 5K. We have raised $10,500 so far. We have 60 team members, and if you join on Thursday by midnight, you'll get your Rebel. That is a normal collar. Find a new slant t-shirt, thanks to LL Pavorsky and Colony Meadery. Just go to this post on rightsrickysanchez.com to sign up. Without any further ado, here is Run the Jewels.
We are the murderers there. There with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight.
Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who is diving in vain to try to block Aaron Baines' three-point shot. That is Mike Levin. Here we are again. Hi, Mike.
I fucking hate losing to Boston, man. I just fucking hate it. I hate them all. I hate that the NBA fucking made us go to Boston on the fucking first night back after we had a fucking China trip. Just fuck it. This is all bullshit. This is a very frustrating game.
Yeah, it was bad.
I just don't. Aaron Baines, man. Aaron fucking Baines. That's the fucking thing that kills me the most. He has more threes against the Sixers than he has against anyone else combined.
It's unbelievable. And you know it's going in when he shoots it, too. That is the worst part. Okay, maybe you'll agree with this. The best way I can, and maybe it's like this for other teams, but I don't think it is. The best way to describe being a Sixers fan is when you watch the other team shoot a three-pointer, you're sure it's going in.
Yeah.
But when your guy is shooting a three-pointer, you never think it's going in, right? Yeah. Is that like...
That might be most like non-homery fans.
Right. But Aaron Baines is like the... It feels like the epitome of that feeling.
Yeah, I watch when Marcus Morris just shoots. I don't follow the ball's progression to look at the rim. I just look at him because I know that it's gonna go fucking in. He shoots a billion percent. It's just a frustrating team. I think the Sixers played good defense for a lot of the game, not all of it. They forced them into mid-range shots, and Boston just fucking hits mid-range shots against us. And you know, Jaylen Brown dunk blocked a shot in, which was lucky, and Jason Tatum had a step back bank shot straight away against Embiid. Both guys stared him down. That was bullshit. Aaron Baines, Covington, like, and Amir both had tip ins for the other team. Like, it's one of those things where the Sixers played like shit, and for the most part, they played like shit in the Celtics series last year. But it always seems to be the case that Boston has just shit just go in. Things just happen. And it's like, oh, wow, what a fun thing. I fucking hate him, man. I hate Boston.
I want to be careful of two things. First of all, I'm sure that if we're talking about percentage, 85% of the people listening to this particular podcast are Celtics fans. So I want to be careful to not be too upset.
Your people.
And And the second thing is like, you know, it does seem like that's happening, but at a certain point we have to, like, you know, the, oh my God, they're so lucky thing. Like, you know, I hope it either evens out.
That's definitely not all it. It's for sure not. Right. They beat us. It just compounds the frustration. We can go through guy by guy. Al Horford on Embiid is just very frustrating. And also Baines on Embiid. They both play good defense. Embiid's not quick enough laterally for the most part to get by guys off the dribble from, I was going to say from three-point range, but pretty much from anywhere. Obviously, he's incredibly athletic and quick for his size and impossible to stop. But he doesn't get a lot of clean looks against these guys. Horford's long enough to get to block him inside. They didn't double that much, but when they did, they came over for big blocks. Rozier had one.
Well, and it does seem like his frustration when they're guarding him forces him to try even harder, which makes it even worse.
Right. I empathize with, because I would do the same thing. I'm you know, hitting the mute button on my remote with the level of frustration that he's trying to score inside on. So I'm doing what I can. It just isn't conveying on the court. They're just good. I mean, they're a good team. They're deep. Kyrie fucking sucks, and I'm just gonna put that there and be the guy that says Kyrie sucks. Hayward was not 100%. Jason Tatum inexplicably makes everything. Same with Marcus Morris. Every time Marcus Smart hits a shot, I want to die. Jaylen Brown didn't play that well. I actually usually like him. Rozier has never missed a shot against the Sixers. That's fine. It's just they're a frustrating team. And if the Sixers, if the goal of this offseason was let's get enough guys to where we can compete with Boston and we can bang with them, I would say that this game they didn't have two of those guys that they acquired. Three, actually, if you want to count Muscala, although his defense isn't his strong suit. Speaking of suits, looked interesting on the sideline, Mike Muscala.
It's not a great look.
Yeah, I think he was going for it. I tweeted that he was the, my bad, I have a bad racist dad look going on.
That is terrible. Don't do that to him.
He did have a bad racist dad. His dad's very hateful racist stuff. And so he's like,
I know, but that's not Mike Muscala's fault.
Of course not. Everyone has bad dads. You do.
And his sideline outfit did sort of look similar to the way Fultz dressed when he was out.
It was just funny. I just didn't. When they cut to it, it was just jarring. And I go, that's really funny. But I would add Zaire and Wilson Chandler also not playing. So we'll see how long those guys are out for. So this is essentially the same kind of team that they lost in five to Boston last time, I would say. It's not like Ersan and Bellinelli were doing a lot of work on the defensive end. So you still had to see Redick on those guys. You had to see TJ. Shamet did what he could. Dario did what he could. But, you know, they're getting switches. They swing the ball, and they hit shots. And the Sixers didn't. And it was frustrating as hell. Ben played really well. Embiid played okay for a time and a couple really nice moments. But nobody played, like, great. Even Simmons, like, missed a bunch of shots, missed a bunch of foul shots, was sloppy at times. I would say overpassed a couple times and then underpassed sometimes. And so, you know, it was a bad game. They played really badly, and just leaves a bad taste in my mouth when it's against Boston.
Well, one of the things that the way their lineup is constructed, one of the problems that it's going to cause is, so Embiid ended up on Tatum a lot, mostly because, I mean, they switched a lot, but
they started
mostly
there,
because, yeah, if that's what I'm saying, if Dario, like, you sort of have to put Dario on Horford because of how athletic their wings are. So right. And I thought Embiid actually did a pretty solid job when he was guarding wings most of the time, and they if they're going to hit shots, they're going to hit shots. But what that's going to do is it is going to wear, like, that's a lot of work for Embiid defensively. And if they are not going to, and we'll get around to this, but if they are not going to punish the Celtics equally for being not as big as we are and not as strong as we are, and there were a couple of times where, you know, Dario got switches or got Jaylen Brown in the block and took advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seemed like Dario was the guy that ended up with the positive mismatches on our end, and took advantage of them sometimes, but maybe not enough. But we have to be able, the Sixers have to be able to make them pay as much as the Sixers have to pay and make them try to match up with us. And it just doesn't seem like, we certainly didn't do it in this game, but it just, by and large, that's what this is going to come down to. You know, is the Celtics not being as big as the Sixers? That is the only way that this is going to be an advantage toward the Sixers, I think.
Yeah, and it's largely on Embiid to make that work. I think when you put Amir Johnson in for the 10-12 minutes that Embiid sits, it's a struggle because he doesn't change the way. He doesn't like make it harder on you in any way on offense. At least if you had Muscala in there, then it would. You'd have to worry about going five out and Simmons and just a bunch of guys that can shoot. And there are a bunch of guys there that just couldn't shoot. There's just not that many. There's not enough guys in the team. And this is the worry with, you know, this is what I was concerned with Shamet, although he held his own. He didn't have a good game tonight, but I believe in him becoming a guy like that. With hopefully Zaire, and then if Wilson Chandler can hit shots, it's just guys that can hold their own on defense and also hit shots. And when you have Simmons false lineups or Simmons TJ lineups, or Amir in there, you're just like, there's too many guys that can't shoot. There's just too many guys in there that don't that aren't looking for their shot and that can't shoot. Like when the ball comes to Marcus Smart, not a good shooter, but he can sit there, steady himself, and hit a shot. And we just have too many guys that essentially refuse to do that. And that makes the offense suffer. They try to get the ball into Embiid in the post a lot of times, which is, I think, what you got to do against this kind of team is that, you know, there's no real mismatch unless you get Kyrie on somebody. So you get the ball into him, but if Fultz and Simmons are the ones passing the inlet, and making the entry passes, they're just making it hard on them because no one's needing to cover Fultz and Simmons at the line. So when Redick started doing it and it became, you know, weaponized a little bit that way, and he got some open looks that way, because then it becomes, well, pick your poison. But with Fultz and Simmons, especially Fultz, he's not only not looking to shoot, but he's not looking to attack a lot. And when he does attack, it feels like it's hesitant still and slower than you want it to be, not there all the way.
And before we get to Fultz, and why don't we just go guy. Therein lies the real issue between, you know, not talking about their relationship, just talking about the on-court thing. There is the Simmons Embiid thing, because you would say, if you were to build a team around, if you were like, Simmons is your first guy, build around him, you would be like, and you said this in the offseason at one point, like, it's not as simple as, you know, putting four shooters around him, but it kind of is, right? So you would say that the thing that you would do with Simmons is play sort of small, maybe have him and, you know, be the biggest guy on the court even, and surround him with shooters, let him drive and spread the floor and give him room to work and blah, blah, blah. But then if you were to say, let me build the team around Embiid, it would sort of be the center version of the same thing. You would say, well, make him like Dwight Howard in the Orlando Magic, and make it so impossible for them to double team him, or make it so have to come so far that somebody gets open. And therein lies the inherent issue in these two guys being your best two players right now, at least, in that they don't really particularly complement each other offensively. And at least right now, the one guy doesn't allow the other guy to be the best version of himself. And that is the thing that if they are to reach their peak, let's forget about everything else. Let's forget about Fultz, forget about another player, so on and so forth. If they are to reach championship level peak, these two guys are going to have to find something to do together. And leaving out, it would be nice if Ben could shoot, but he can't right now, right? So in this time for them to figure it out, they have to figure out something that works between them, because it just seems like too many times they are not running the best version of what would be the best thing for either one of those guys. And that is the challenge, one of the challenges currently, but I think the biggest challenge, actually.
Yeah, I think you saw some of the confusion, like when Embiid went out at the end of last year because he ran into Fultz's shoulder, which is still the craziest thing that somehow the craziest thing that's happened to this team. Yeah. The team knew what it was, right? It was just Simmons, and we're running, and it's Bellinelli and Redick and Dario and Cove like flying down the wings, Ilyasova, and just say, hey, you're either covering Simmons in this penetration, or he's going to kick it out to somebody for a three, and they were just goring people that way. And with Embiid out there, there's sometimes it's like, okay, are we going to play that Embiid's going to just go into the post, and we're just going to wait around a little bit and hope that the double comes, and if he does, then we'll kick it out to us, or Embiid is going to be, you know, trailer guy and step into a three from the top of the key from the Spencer Hawes zone, as we used to know it as. And sometimes at the top of the key, like, you could see that there's just like a kind of a confusion between them up there tonight of who is like manning what place on the court. And I don't know. Yes, right now, if Embiid is not hitting shots if he's not hitting open threes at a good clip, because he should, like, open threes, you should be able, you know, no one's blocking that shot. He should be able to shoot 35%+ from three on wide open looks. So if he's not doing that, then it makes it a lot harder to play those guys together. But I think that they're both really good basketball players, and they both make defenses do a lot of things that make them uncomfortable. And whether that's doubling Embiid in the post or just being on your heels while you're waiting for Simmons to like bound into you like a train, it opens things up. So I still think the best version of this team is with them on the court together. But I think going forward, you want to give them enough breaks. Like, Simmons played 43 minutes tonight. Like, that's way too much. Embiid played 37. Like, even that's kind of a lot. Like,
right. Yeah.
It's early and they've had time, but, and they didn't play that many preseason games, but still, like, it's a lot. So you want to let's stagger those minutes, and let's be the one team when Simmons on the court, the other team when Embiid's on the court, and then try to figure out ways to make the defense work and be and have to pick their poison when they're both on there.
I agree. Do you want to talk about?
Wait, can I keep going, Embiid?
Yeah.
The turnovers fucking kill me. They kill me. Oh my god. They make me so upset. He's so careless with the ball so often, and that broke me in the playoffs last year, and it's going to just keep breaking me until he's less careless. And they're just things that are avoidable, wildly avoidable. And it wasn't just him. Kov had a couple annoying turnovers, Dario faults. But, man, his always seemed like the most egregious. Just, like, pass the ball with two hands and control it, and I don't know why. Maybe this, I feel like old and lame talking about it, but the careless turnovers absolutely drive me insane.
I don't think they are careless. Like, careless seems like the wrong word. They seem like they are he seems like when he is at his worst, he is misfocusing his energy. Like, he almost thinks he can will his way into something working. And, like, it's always when the post touch goes 20% too long that there's the turnover. It's always when, it is literally almost always when he is trying to do a little too much on his own and not just sort of like, working within what the right play should be.
Right. Well, those I'm actually okay with. In the post, okay, when you're trying to make things work, and, you know, he's going to get better at feeling the double team. Sometimes he's good, sometimes he's not. He'll get better as the season goes on. I'm talking about, like, when he's at the top of the key or just, like, passing the ball out or, like, looking for a shooter when, like, JJ's running behind a screen or something. Whether it's a lack of communication or a lack of focus, sometimes it's just, like, easy passes. There was one that I think Tatum stole, just him passing at the top of the key. That was just like, come on, make a crisper pass, or know that that guy's about to try to steal it. Like, it just, those kinds of things are what kills me. Him in the post, it's like, especially when you're frustrated against guys that, there's not many guys in the league that can hang with Embiid, and the Celtics have two. So I get why he's frustrated, and I get trying to do too much for sure. But it's the stuff like in the front court that is, like, that is killing me.
Yep. I think he was he was a we talk about him so much on offense, and we talk about him on defense a lot. Like, I think we almost underplay how good he is on defense.
Yeah.
And he was again tonight. I mean, in pretty much all ways. In hustle back to make the block, mm-hmm. regular post defense, like low post defense, and then the number of times, and he's going to have to get used to this, especially against the Celtics, and especially against in the NBA in 2018, his ability to switch onto wings and do an admirable job there, especially at his size. He does look thinner this year. I mean, I bet he's 10 or 12 or 15 pounds lower than he was last year. That would be my guess.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
He definitely looks trimmer. But his ability to switch onto wings and keep position and not look stupid is pretty impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think especially, you know, that's clearly his weakness, as it would be as it is Gobert's mm-hmm. weakness, as it is anybody's, if you're that big and you're switched onto a guard. He does a good job of it for a big guy, but it's still – you'd like to see him get his hand up more. I think it's always – he's late to get a hand up, and if he – when like Rozier's on him or Kyrie or even Tatum hits impossible shots all the time, and it drives me insane. But I would like him to get a hand up earlier, so rather than like the diving for it, lunging at the last second.
Yep.
He took the Aaron Baines threes personally when they made the run. They made the run at the end of the fourth with like 4 or 5 minutes left, and they cut it to like six, didn't they?
Six.
Yeah. It was close. I was already writing this game off, and they cut it to six, and then immediately went back to like 14. But
all right, we'll get to talk about faults right after we talk about our first sponsor for this podcast, DraftKings.
Mm.
Mike, as unfortunately we know, and we've been discussing, basketball season is finally back, and you know what that means. First of all, it means once again we're talking about Aaron Baines' three-pointers that went in, but it also means it is time to put your basketball knowledge to the test with one-day fantasy basketball at DraftKings. DraftKings is giving away over $400 million in prizes this season. That is more than 10 times what Los Angeles is paying the king himself. More than 10 times, Mike. No matter what your skill level is, there's a contest waiting for you at DraftKings. I would suggest investing in Aaron Baines when he plays us.
Daniel Tice got a rebound tonight.
He did.
Could have had that rebound.
Could have had him for a dollar, I bet. Mm. Drafting your team is simple. Take your 8 players, stay under the $50,000 salary cap, earn points when your players score, assist, block, rebound, and more. The best part is you get to draft a new team every day without any commitment at all. There's no better way to turn your love of basketball into cash. You can either play DraftKings or do 2 podcasts every week, even when there's no basketball. Those are the 2 best ways to do it. Download the app or head over to DraftKings.com right now. Use the code RTRS to support the show and play for free with your first deposit. And remember, there will be $400 million in total prizes up for grabs throughout the season. That is code RTRS to play for free with your first deposit only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for detail.
Jonah Bolden didn't record a stat tonight.
Not one stat. He would have been bad to invest in.
Mm, no turnovers, though. So that's a plus.
Well, that is a plus. So Markel Fultz started the game, barely played in the second half after Brett Brown said that the reason he wouldn't start the second half is so he could play point guard minutes, and then proceeded to bring TJ off the bench in the second half. My obviously will be perceived poorly impression was that he looked pretty bad in the first half, in that he almost looked like he wasn't there.
For a while, yeah. They didn't. Yeah, the first few possessions, it was very...
They didn't pass to him. When he drove, it looked like he almost hoped there would be nobody there. And when there was somebody there, he got turned around a lot. He did look in his second run in the first half a little bit better, but that's when they pull Simmons completely off the ball and let him do a little more. And then he barely played in the second half. So what happened in the second half was what happened in the first half, and then what happened in the second half is like my concern about them sort of committing to starting him is that they are realizing that they will be better when someone else is playing. And there was like even a noticeable difference when TJ McConnell was in there, at least at this point, at least to my eyes. And if they are dead set on not giving games away because of like Markelle Fultz, because they're going to have to, then I find it hard to believe that he's going to be able to stay on the floor very much. And especially starting, and you mentioned this earlier, with him and Simmons on the court at the same time with Embiid, we talked in the season preview one about making life easier on Embiid. And by playing those two guys at the same time, and to your point, Fultz especially, because he's not even like, not even driving definitively and going strong, like, I don't know what they're going to do with him if this is sort of what he's going to look like. I know it was the first game, you know, with all those caveats, but I didn't think it looked very good.
Yeah. Yeah. With all the caveats of first game, Boston's a good team, back from the training trip, all that stuff. This is, that Fultz that we saw is not crazy different than the Fultz we saw at the end of last season, which was
right. Maybe
with like a slightly improved jumper, but certainly not an exciting willingness to take it. It's not a smooth, easy, like he gets the ball from three, he's open, he's taking it. Like all, I would love for him to just be Marcus Smart this year with the jump shot. Like,
yeah.
Take
it. Like Marcus Smart doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
He'll shoot it all he wants. Right.
It's such a confidence thing. And Nobody knows how to talk about this in a healthy way. Nobody knows what they're saying. Everyone just wants the kid to be good and wants him to take shots. And I don't know if, you know, you sort of trust the Sixers about being like, look, we invested all this time into him. Let's start him. And we think that's going to be best. But the start him in the first half, take him off the bench in the second, it's just such nothing. It's such bullshit.
Right.
Like, Why are we deciding? Sometimes you don't start somebody in the second half because the matchup doesn't depend on it. But like announcing it ahead of time, it just all feels so like manufactured and mechanical, which is also kind of how you can describe Fultz's game at this point. And he was so good in college. He was so good in college. I watched him so much, and I just wanted to be that guy again. And I don't know if we're ever going to see it. This is one game. Not too many like victory laps from Drew Hanlon going around. I don't know.
No, courtside hand jobs for Drew in this game. Yeah. No.
Just like, yeah. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think any answer is right. I think if you said every single opinion that everyone has on Fultz and the Fultz's involvement with the Sixers, and I think everything's wrong. I don't think anyone's right. It's just a very sad, upsetting situation where a guy used to be good and now he's kind of not. I still believe in the other aspects of his game once the jumper comes along. It's like those things disappeared also. But so much of it is a confidence thing, and if he's not doing the one thing confidently, then he's not going to do anything confidently. And I think he showed some nice things on defense tonight. I think he passes the ball pretty well sometimes. He's clearly very smooth when he feels himself, but it, you know, that one jumper that went in was a contested tough shot, and he looked good doing it, and the free throw form looked fine. But man, I just can't believe I was so. Once he took that one three, not even the one that went in. Once he took the one three,
the first one,
I was just like, oh, it's gonna be normal now. It's gonna be normal, and we can talk about the Sixers as if they're a normal team with a guy who they're trying to figure out matchups, and he's getting better and he makes rookie mistakes and all that stuff. And I just wanted to believe it so bad. I so did. I wanted to will the normalness into existence. And just like, it's not normal yet. Hopefully this season, just I can't see a world where they stop playing him. I think that'd be really unexpected. Maybe they do another fake injury again. But that, I mean, are we really going down that road again? I think the only chance that they have is to like let him play and try to play through it. Sixers are going to make the playoffs. They're going to probably host a first-round matchup. So if you have to play Fultz 20, 25 minutes a game, even if a lot of those minutes are negatively impacting the team, the hope is that just if he plays 80 fucking games, hopefully he'll work himself into being the guy that he used to be, or some approximation of it in like a little bit of a way.
Well, they have backed themselves into, like, dude, you can't, with as pessimistic as I have been about the, I described my feeling on Fultz as hopeful but pessimistic. With as pessimistic as I've been, they have to keep at this at this point. Like, this cannot be one of those things where he's not starting in two or three games because they're like, oh no, it didn't work. Like, they saw the same fucking thing we saw in preseason.
More of it.
They saw more, right? They saw everything we saw last year. They know about all of this. And like, so they should have had the same apprehension to doing this. And I agree with you, like, the start the first half thing. I've been watching the NBA since I was like 10 years old, and I don't think I've ever even heard of that. Now, that doesn't mean it's not a good idea to start one guy one half and the other guy the other half as a plan every game, but it does mean, to your point, like, what is that even? So if they are going to, especially if Brett is going to say, well, we're going to have to play TJ in the second half, and I love TJ, but if you can't bring yourself to play Fultz over TJ, then, you know, then you're never going to give it a chance. And I don't think it has that much of a chance of working, but you at least, if you think it has any chance of working at all, I don't know. It's either, he's either got to play here or he's got to go to the G League and play, and maybe he can figure it out there. But yeah, like,
I don't think they're going to send him to the G League.
Well, right. I just think playing this back and forth with everybody focusing on how weird it is and playing 7 minutes or whatever he's going to end up playing is not going to work. You know,
yeah, I think you just got to play through it. I think you just got to play through it. And then, you know, I think the focus will just naturally dim. If he plays 20, 25 minutes a game, whether that's starting or off the bench, it doesn't super matter to me. If he plays that, like, if he plays that every game, by like game 23, you're just like, yeah, he was, you know, he was 3 of 9 with like 2 of 5 from the line. I mean, he's going to do good things on the court, and he's going to do bad things on the court. But we just, I think it's still like a novelty at this point. Obviously, this was the first game of the season for anyone, so there was a lot of focus on it. And I think you just, once you get into November, December, just keep playing him. Let him fuck up. Let him get comfortable. He did not look comfortable at all tonight. You hear things from the Sixers about how excited they are, how good he looks in practice, how he's dominant on one end, and how guys can't stay with him, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I don't know if that's spin, or I don't know if that's what, or when the lights come on and he's just, you know, he gets nervous or things change. I don't know. It's clearly, part of it is as is a lot of, you know, this keeps coming out around the league, like, it's a mental health issue and people have to take care of themselves mentally and work themselves up into becoming, you know, the person that they want to be and who they are in the mental space that they want to be in. But it's so obvious with him because he's a kid and because the pressure's on him and everyone's just looking at it, and it's just tough to watch. It's horrible to watch. I think the only way to do it is to keep doing it, and that's sad, and it may make the team worse. It might be frustrating, but hopefully that just like comfort comes eventually, and that you know, as we've said for a fucking year and a half, the best version of this team is one where Markelle Fultz is the guy that they drafted. Ben Simmons slowly becomes a person that can shoot, and Embiid shoots a reasonable percentage from three, and no one in the league can cover all of those guys at their best. Not even the Celtics. They can't do it. There's too much ability there, and you throw Covington and JJ or whoever around those guys, and it's just a really, really tough team to stop, and that's what you need to be an elite-level team. And if there's any hope of that happening, you just got to keep playing them. You just got to keep playing them and playing them and playing them.
So, Dario, aside from the couple of times that he took his size advantage down low, man, I'll keep saying it, the three-pointer looks awfully flat this year. Looks flatter than last year. Am I crazy? Is it just that it's not going in? It looks flat to me.
Well, I would say he hasn't been shooting well. He played this summer for national team, and teams that come back from the China trip are like 1-7 in their first game back and stuff. So it's not surprising to see some guys be off or shooting flat or whatever. Dario, and I've said this before, is just the most – it's so obvious when his shots are going in from on jumpers because it's when he steps into it. And when he moves his feet like to the side or like doesn't fully like catch for the 1-2, he's got to like fully step into it. And when he does and he steps into it clean, it's going to go in. And none of the shots that he took today were stepping into it. I don't know if he's not using behind like the 4-point line like the Sixers draw for him. He just seemed out of sorts and kind of nowhere tonight, and he got in foul trouble, so maybe that made him weird. I don't know. It's just not remotely good Dario game tonight.
Covington, boy, man, I don't want him to play the Celtics anymore either. He had a couple of threes. Jesus Christ. I did find some new people to mute tonight, because if you talk negatively about, he is definitely my child and that I will protect. I will defend him no matter what. I'm completely awake to the fact that I am totally biased. But he did hit those couple of threes. He made a couple of nice defensive plays. I didn't think he was horrible.
No.
Like he was in this, but he wasn't great tonight.
He was just almost every shot that he took was short. Like
short.
Decidedly yeah. short.
But blame China. Definitely China.
Blame China. Always blame China. I thought he played pretty well in the on defense, and I think a lot of times Cov's thing will be to like let the quicker ball handler go by him and kind of poke the ball out from behind, which is a dicey proposition.
Yeah.
And I don't think he did that much tonight. I think he really moved his feet well and bodied guys and didn't let guys go by him. So I appreciated that. And I saw a little bit of dribbling, a little bit of more confident ball handling, I would say. Obviously in a great game offensively, but I love Cov and believe in him, and I think this team is still better when he's there, and I think the shots will fall. The shots that went in looked very pure, which as they usually do when they go in.
Well,
if we isolate the makes are good.
And he, it's funny. Dario's shot is flat, and it almost seems like Covington shoots too high, I would say. He has a really high three-pointer, but his two threes did come at a good time, it felt like, in the third quarter.
Yeah, there was Covington sequence that felt yep. good.
Yeah. Onto the bench, Redick, boy, man. Started to even out in the second half a little bit, but couldn't buy a shot tonight.
Yeah.
And I was convinced, like I am convinced that Redick is taking the false starting thing, even though he's saying the right things, is taking it personally. And I believe he wants to play his way back into the starting lineup. But
yeah.
But he was not a good Redick game tonight.
Yeah. I would rather Redick be in the lineup than Dario. I think that especially when the Sixers don't have many wings, let's get another wingish type off the bench. Dario is obviously not a strong defender, but I'd rather put JJ in. I think the team plays better with him there. He missed a bunch of shots. I'm not worried about JJ. Like
no,
he had a
no,
couple
no.
nice things. No. Horford was ready for that floater. He was so ready for it. He bit on that very easily, and JJ just got swallowed up.
Yeah, that was a Dwight Howard block, like where you bat it and you shouldn't have. Like he could have just caught it.
Yeah,
he could have just caught it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. TJ did a couple nice things. Kind of disappeared for a lot of the time. I think there was just a level of a lack of cohesiveness to everybody on the court. There were very few sequences when it felt like, oh, this is Sixers basketball. This is what they do. In transition, there were more of those. But in half court, I would say there were a couple like nice screens moments to get shooters open, and a couple nice times when teams had to decide whether to cover the drive or to like, commit onto Redick or commit onto Embiid, and that opened up some things for one time for Cov, one time for TJ. But TJ did all right. I wish he was more comfortable shooting. I don't know. Maybe guys just don't become that. Maybe I'm just expecting too much, and I want guys to go from being hesitant shooters to being, I've practiced all summer for this. I'm going to let it fly. I don't need, you know, 15 feet to release it. I'm confident in my shot. But I
he is confident with it when he has 15 feet, though.
Right.
I'll tell you, he doesn't flinch at that point. So.
Well, it's hard to flinch when you're moving in slow motion to get your release off.
It would be a really long flinch.
Yeah.
Our other sponsor for today's episode is LL Pavorsky Jewelers, who is no doubt taking this loss as hard, if not harder, than we are. I mean, if they're going to trade Rashawn Holmes, the least they could, or they traded Holmes. The least they could do is win the game, but they didn't. But you'll be a winner if you go to LL Pavorsky Jewelers. That's right. Especially if you get a engagement ring from LL. 106 Rights to Ricky Sanchez listeners now have purchased engagement rings from LL Pavorsky Jewelers. And if you go into the store, not only do you see a beautiful store where you get personal friendly service from LL himself, but you see with LL's logo up on the wall, beneath that logo, that's right, you see a Rights to Ricky Sanchez logo.
Mm.
Because I'm never going to get over that. I'm never going to get over it. I can't wait to see it in person. I've only seen the pictures. I can't wait to see it. Aside from the logo, which we'll put to the side for now, but everyone who has gone to LL and we have talked to about it has just told us amazing stories and been so happy with the purchase because he is such a good guy and a great jeweler. That's why he's been in business as long as he has. Three decades, not an accident. So if you're going to buy an engagement ring, you go to LL. Even if you got to buy an anniversary present, Christmas present, whatever, Valentine's Day gift, LL Pavorsky Jewelers is where you go. If you're going to get an engagement ring, make sure you make an appointment before you go over there so he can find out what you want, what you need. 215-627-2252. The store is at 707 Walnut. You can always email him at llpavorsky.com or just tweet him. At LL Pavorsky. He's probably tweeting about the Sixers because he's a jeweler, tweets about the Sixers. And for every podcast, LL makes generous donations to Coded by Kids and the Providence Animal Center. LL Pavorsky Jewelers.
Running the jewels and then getting a running start and jumping the shark and then continuing to jump the shark again and again and again and again.
He is committed to it. He is truly committed to it. We talked about Shamet for a minute. He was okay. Wasn't much of anything. Didn't seem like he did anything.
Yeah, he got worked by Marcus Smart that one time, and just like this is the level of physicality that the NBA brings. I love how they use him. I love how they use him exactly like JJ, and that's what you want. JJ seems to like him and seems to respect his work ethic. And if Landry can be it. I don't think JJ is one of the best shooters of all time. So if Landry can be on the road to JJ with a little bit more ball handling, quickness, defensive versatility, then that's a really, really nice pick at 26. He didn't shoot well tonight, but I didn't think he was embarrassing at any point. He has a bounce and a pep to him that I think is nice off the bench. And I think he's going to keep playing this year.
You know what is amazing? Talking about the ability to shoot, the number of guys who are this is one of the things I think is so interesting about scouting college basketball to come play in the NBA is the number of guys who can really, really shoot in college basketball. There are a lot of guys that can do it. And who's the fucking the BYU guy? Same year as Kemba Walker.
Jimmer.
Jimmer Fredette. Like, just an unconscious, unreal shooter in college basketball. Like, really just mind-blowing. Cannot find a spot in the NBA. Just can't stay on the court. And it's amazing to find a guy like Shamet who... it's just amazing to me, like, the ability of some guys to be able to play in the NBA and be able to use that skill, and then the other guys who come to the NBA and just can't do it. And it does look like Shamet, when he plays, fits in and plays at the same speed that everybody else plays. He did look awfully small in a regular season game. Like, he looked, like, stature-wise, he looked very small to me. He looked, physically, he looked small.
Yeah.
But
when I watched him in college, I thought he was, like, 6'4", 6'5", and then it came out that he was 6'7". And it was like,
it's crazy. He doesn't look like that.
Just interesting. And he's got to put on weight, and he's got to get there. But he seems like he gives a shit, and really, truly, he does look like you.
He does.
There's a lot of Spike Eskin in Landry Shamet's face. It's crazy.
I was writing a Sixers preview thing for the 94 WIP site today, and I even mentioned it in there as like one of the big questions for the team. It's like, does Landry Shamet, do I actually look that much like Landry Shamet? And the answer is yes, I actually do.
Yeah, it's so alarming. Amir had a couple nice plays. How about that dunk? That was an exciting dunk.
Yo, where did that come from?
He got a running start, and he like hung there. I was like, what is it, 2008?
Yeah, if you had to bet, if they showed you the dunk without showing you who it was, and they said you have to bet your life on whether that's Amir Johnson, you would bet no.
Yeah, I would have bet no.
I don't think Amir Johnson could do that.
I would have died on that dunk. That was crazy. Good for him. And then he had the play right before that was a nice little dive to the basket, and he got fouled and went to the line. So it was that minute and a half of gameplay really shined. Not much else looks. I mean, like, I don't know, Aaron Baines, big guy, but it seems like Aaron Baines gets every rebound around Amir Johnson, every single one. And
he's a big dude, man, Aaron Baines. Yeah, physically, he's a really big, really big dude.
Do we not play Boston for a while? Can we not? Can we just like?
I don't think we play him for a long while. Like, I don't think we play him until February.
That's really good.
I'm gonna look at the schedule now, but yeah, we need. So what do we have? The Bulls on Thursday.
Yeah.
And who is on Saturday?
Orlando. Would love to just go 2-1.
Get healthy there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Next time we play Boston is, a while from now.
Good. That's all I needed. I don't want to. Aaron Baines' name is banned from this podcast until further notice.
His name, or what if? We play him on Christmas. That's right.
Fuck.
Great.
He's gonna fucking ruin Christmas.
He sure is.
I'm so tired of them hitting contested mid-range shots. I'm so tired of it. Even ISO mid-range pull-ups. Like, again, I think they could do a better job of getting a hand up quicker to just disrupt the shot. But it's just automatic. It's automatic mid-range, and you look at the shot chart, and it's like, yeah, a lot of green in that mid-range, and that's just it doesn't really happen in the NBA anymore. And it seems like it. It seems like it always happens against Sixers. And they didn't play well. They didn't deserve to win tonight, but it feels even worse in spite of that. But let's talk about a couple good plays, if you don't mind. The Simmons behind his head pass to Fultz, a cutting Markel Fultz.
Fucking awesome.
Was gorgeous.
So I watched it, like, I actually rewound it, watched it a few times, and I thought to myself, man, Markel, I wish you fucking yammed that.
Yes. Like, why doesn't he dunk now? Is he playing in Megalex?
It reminds me of, you remember how Thaddeus Young would never fucking dunk anything?
I do remember that.
Okay, so like he had the lane wide open and it was such a beautiful pass, and a dunk and a scream would have been.
Unleash it.
Fucking dunk that thing, man. Fucking yam it. Come on.
I never feel like a kid at a mall more than being like, fucking just dunk it.
Dunk it.
Just fucking do it.
Well, here we get Jaylen Brown screaming he didn't even dunk it. But that was beautiful. That Simmons pass was absolutely beautiful. Simmons was he was Simmons tonight. He was normal Simmons, but I thought he made a couple of real – so when Fultz was in that particular run and was point guarding more, and they had Simmons doing more post stuff, Simmons made a couple of really good plays there, mm-hmm. of good plays to score, threw a couple of good passes. I thought overall he had a really solid game, Simmons. He was the best player on the floor.
Yeah, 7 of 14 from the field, 19, 15, 8, 4, and 2. Like, that's just loading it up, man. And really good defensively, got his hands in there, pissed people off. It's amazing. He can play inside and out on defense. He can cover 1 through 5. Like, it's unbelievable how good he is. The drop off to Embiid also in transition was very nice, between the legs. I didn't realize it was between the legs in the moment, but on the replay you could see that he dropped it between his legs, which was nice. That's the kind of stuff you want to see, because it's just so imposing if you're the other team. I especially, last season, if you remember, I was like somewhat critical of Simmons's ball handling, because especially in the half court, because it seems like he's loose with it. He's got that kind of rugby style. Like, if I have it within a diameter of me in this circumference, I remember math terms, then you're not going to be able to take it from me. And usually they didn't, but it didn't allow him to like get by people in the half court very often. It seems like his handle has gotten significantly better, and just sort of carving through people and having this like little hesitation thing that can get open and just finishing inside. It's just, he's really good. He's really good. I'm glad he's really good. It'd be worse if he wasn't good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think that's fair to say.
I also, the final very nice play, Embiid Skyhook was very nice.
Oh,
that
was nice.
That was a true Skyhook. People say Skyhook a little frivolously.
And but that was a Skyhook.
That was a Skyhook for real, and that was nice.
I wish he would do it. Learn that fucking shot, man. The reason Kareem Abdul-Jabbar scored more than anybody else that played was because of that shot. You can't guard it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about Brett keeping the beard into the regular season?
Love it. 100%.
Big controversy. Yeah. Okay, you want him to stay even though they got their asses handed to them.
Yeah, for sure.
Keep it.
I don't know. I mean, look, they definitely played bad. I'm not going to say they didn't play bad. They of course did. But they were within six in the last 5 minutes. Obviously, that Boston stretched the lead, but I think that that still the Sixers have the two best players in this matchup. And if they can be optimally used and guys are hitting shots around them, like the Sixers, I hate saying make or miss league, they were 5 of 26 from 3. Like they were 5 of 26. They were down 6 with like 4 or 5 minutes to play. If they go 8 of 26 from 3, which is bad, and they're also 14 of 24 from the line. So, like, nothing went well. They turned the ball over in obvious ways. I think a lot of times the turnovers were really, really correctable. Sometimes were nice Celtics plays, but not most of them, I would say. I think this was a lot of – they beat themselves in a bunch of ways, and then the Celtics just hit some tough shots. And so, as frustrating as this game was, and it definitely feels like we're right back in May or whenever that game was, it's not an overreact to one game situation. They're missing depth and they missed a bunch of shots and they came back from China and blah, blah, blah. I don't even believe myself, but I believe it. And I also don't believe it. It's like, well, they played like shit and they deserve to lose, but they also very easily could have won that game had not like only 75% of the bad things happened.
Here's the reality. Like my opinion on how good I think Boston's going to be, completely aside, like they are a more developed, even though they haven't all played together all that much, like they are a better team right now than the Sixers are. Like I think that is a reality that almost nobody questioned. I think even if you ask Sixers fans who's going to have a better record this year, the Celtics or the Sixers, almost everybody is saying that the Celtics would. So, I think one thing that good that you can take from this, and Embiid's, I don't know if you saw the quote after the game, they're asking him about a rivalry, and he's like, they always kick our ass. It's not a rivalry. Like, I don't know what our record is against them, but they always kick our ass.
Good.
So good. Like, I want them to this is like the motivation version of you're just dunking on them. This is stupid, but I want them to see what they're up against. You know, like this is if you guys forgot in the playoffs last year, this is what you're going to have to get by at some point this year, and what you're going to have to figure out. And Joel, you're going to have to figure it out, and Simmons is going to have to figure out, and everybody's going to have to figure this out. So I'm glad that at the beginning of the season, there was this sort of reminder that that is what they're up against this year. And if, you know, so real quick, I just wanted to throw AU. We did our bold predictions draft, which I think was scored completely unfairly. But AU did his bold predictions on the Right Streaky Sanchez site today. And I just wanted to throw a few of them at you and see what you thought. One of his bold predictions is that Simmons versus Ingram will officially for the first time actually be a thing this year, because of how Ingram will be used in LA and that he's going to have like a breakout year. AU even called him like a borderline all-star. How do you feel about that one?
I feel that is wrong. I like Brandon Ingram and I always have. And he's on my fantasy team that you have abandoned the league.
Yes, I have. Well, I won and I have nothing left to prove.
Legs won and there were some misconduct allegations that you wanted to get skirt.
Misconduct. Fuck you. There are no misconduct allegations.
I think he's gonna be good. LeBron makes everybody better. Of course he's gonna be better. But I don't think it's not going to be a question. It's just not. It's not going to be a question. He's not good enough at anything to compete with how good Simmons is at so many things already. Like,
right.
Ingram is, you know, there's people are arguing between like him and Kuzma, and it's like, he's like, fine. Ingram's going to be fine. He's long. He's going to defend. He's not that quick. He's not that good of a shooter. He's not that good of a defender, although his length helps him. He's so frail. It's just not a question, and it never will be. Simmons is already one of the top 20 players in the league. Ingram is like, what? Hopefully this year he's like 52. Where's Jay Crowder? I don't know. Not worried. Not worried about it. Let's see Brandon Ingram develop a fucking show. How about that?
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to tell you. AU and I have just signed a deal to produce a show based on Brandon Ingram's life.
Wow, amazing. I look forward to it.
A couple of other ones. Actually, his Sixers ones I didn't think were the other one that I thought was funny was the Sixers will lose a major player to injury and then win 10 in a row. Sure. I enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
But his NBA takes were better, I thought. One, that the Raptors will be a bummer. And just ultimately be a disappointment.
Well, so I tweeted my Eastern Conference predictions where I had the East be Celtics, Sixers, Bucks, Raptors. And I'm high on the Raptors, but I just think that like with injuries and a new coach and like the Kawhi stuff, I think it just could be weird for a while. And I think that their team is just going to kind of muddle along through the regular season with ups and downs. And then by the time the playoffs hit, I think they're going to lock in, and I have them beating Boston in the second round, so the Sixers don't have to play them.
Well, you need to find a way to. That's a much better way to get the Sixers to the finals than
that's
through
right.
Boston, I guess.
You're welcome.
And then the other one is that Jimmy Butler ultimately leads the Timberwolves to a playoff berth and re-signs with them this offseason.
No, that'd be crazy.
I mean, it is a great prediction. You know, I don't think it is Kobe plays a game for the Lakers crazy, but it is a really good prediction. I did enjoy that one.
Yeah, I think the competing Jimmy Butler things are there are so few available superstar types, and I think Jimmy Butler is. I think he's one of the top 16 maybe players in the league because he plays both ways. But he now more than ever, it seems – people give a shit about chemistry and like good guys and like
people fucking turned on him
culture
real
and all that
like,
stuff. Yeah. And so I think those things will be competing and somebody's going to willing to take a chance on him. And I know Tibbs would definitely be one of those guys. I don't know if Tibbs is going to have the opportunity because I don't think Minnesota is going to make the playoffs because I think the Memphis Grizzlies will be the last team in the West. I believe in Memphis. Healthy Mike Conley, healthy Marc Gasol, some young blood in there. Chandler Parsons, if he's alive, I believe in him. Big Grizzlies fan this year. Big Grizzlies fan. They're my new Jazz. Jazz are too good.
And my final note, if you're out there tweeting about just how good Al Horford is and you don't understand how people don't know it and how fun he is, you're just trying to prove how much you know more than other people.
He's definitely good. Your issue is with the fun part of it.
Yeah, he's not fun. It's not fun. It's not fucking fun to watch somebody get 11-5 and set screens. It's not fucking fun. I just shut up. It's ridiculous. It's like when Robert Mays talks about how much he likes watching like offensive guards play. Like I admire you going after a particular fucking lane. I get it. I understand, but that is not fun.
I think in the sense that watching basketball is fun, and he's good at watching basketball. You've gone on record for a long time of saying you don't like watching the Spurs play basketball. The old, like the 2013 pass the ball around, move and cut Spurs.
Correct.
And that's that's his preference thing. People, I'm sure, say things about us that the 2013, 2014, 2015 tanking Sixers were not fun to watch. But they were, sometimes. Most of the time they were fun to talk about.
They're
fun to talk about and fun to exist with. I think it's a preference thing. Do I think Al Horford is the most fun player in the league? No. But do I marvel at like some of the things he can do and how versatile he is? And he seems to always just hit everything. And like the idea that he's like quicker than he looks and maneuvers better than he looks is one thing. But the shots always just seem to roll in and find a way to go in. And it's He's never missed a shot against Sixers. It's killing me. One last point. Two last points. Can I have two last points?
Yeah, sure.
I know you got to go to bed.
No, I drove home today thinking 7 o'clock tip, blah, 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 blah. I get home, I put on the tee, and I'm like, wait a minute. 8 o'clock tip? Oh, no. Sorry, what man. A nightmare.
It happens.
Go ahead.
The first half, Simmons got pretty much wherever he wanted, and I think Brad Stevens did a good job of adjusting and saying even to during the half-court interview with Roz Goldawunde, that we're going to keep him out of the lane. That's what we're going to try to do. And if he kicks it out, that's fine. But they crashed on him and didn't let him do a lot of the stuff he did in the first half. And that was really good. And the next evolution of Brett Brown's coaching ability is seeing him make those kinds of adjustments. And I think that he does sometimes. I think he runs good plays. I think the Sixers have, I would say, some of the most interesting screening and cutting and finding guys open in the league. But I would like to see making adjustments on guys that I don't necessarily see that to that level yet, if he wants to take that less leap as a coach. And also, this is point 1.5. There was one time where JJ got the ball from Simmons, and then two guys sort of doubled JJ on the shot, and JJ sort of slipped the ball in between them and passed Simmons into a cut. Do you remember what I'm talking about? He was at Simmons with the elbow, and he wasn't like immediately realizing I'm wide open, let me cut to the basket. And JJ, there was a hesitation. I read into that hesitation. I read a month into that hesitation. But JJ was like, go to the basket. You're open. I'm passing this ball to you, so you have to go to the basket and get it. And I just want to see more of that. I want Ben to be cutting. People are going to leave him, and he's got to make them pay for that. And it's just, and that's just like being aware of when you don't have the ball and how you can be active off the ball. And so hopefully see more of that. I liked JJ sort of forcing the issue there and Ben reacting and being successful. Want to see more of that. Last thing, broadly, Sixers play the first game of the season, primetime, Sixers-Boston, rivalry. They have the two best players on the court, two of the best young guys in the league. The process worked. A lot of things don't look great in the moment, and there's still obviously a long way to go, and I think even this Sixers team is not going to be the same Sixers team that they will be at the end of the season. I think there's going to be maneuvering happening. But just, we're so far past the Hinkie era that it's almost we come back around to talking about the process because that's kind of all we did, and then it's like, oh, and now they're good, and we can, but like we're back to that. It's like it's so worked, and we were so right, and just like as frustrating as this game was, how special it was that the fucking Sixers, the Sixers that had Andre Miller as their best player for years, like are the premier, one of the premier teams in the league of like interesting and upside and youth and potential Eastern Conference title contender. I think there's like all that stuff. The process worked. This is what we did it for. They are perennial contenders. We were right. And beating Simmons, hopefully false. Feeling good. Feeling good.
The only correction I will make is that we have the guys with the two most, the two highest upside guys on the court. I don't know that we had the two best players on the court. I don't know if you told me that we're playing in the finals, if I can have Ben Simmons or Kyrie Irving, that I would take Ben.
You would? I would take Ben.
I don't think I would right now, but I do agree that like if you were to pick which two guys are going to be the two best guys in 2 years or whatever it is, then I think so. I'm not sure I would do that yet, but I do agree with the sentiment that the fact that that, you know, somebody tweeted at me that in the Embiid draft, what year is that? 2014?
Yeah.
2014? That Hinkie got the two best players in that draft, in Saric and Embiid, and got an extra pick, which is fucking crazy. The only thing, I guess you could say Aaron Gordon is better than Saric, but in terms of productivity right now, it's definitely close. I think Aaron Gordon, like I would take Aaron Gordon over Saric, but it's pretty crazy that he got that much out of that draft.
And a lot of, and for many people, that was the draft where they were like, Hinkie lost me.
Yeah. Yep.
Can't do it. Yep. Two guys that don't play. Can't do it anymore. That draft was. I would probably take. This is very on brand for me. I would probably take Gary Harris over Dario, especially on this team. That would be a nice fit. As much as I love Dario and Hal, he was a very sweet boy to us. I would probably take Gary Harris. But I would Embiid definitely.
Yeah, and the pick and Dario.
And the pick.
It's a pretty big haul, you know.
It's great. I mean, look, great draft. I love that draft.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if they had only taken Doug McDermott, you never know. All right. We will talk to you this weekend after another game and before another game.
Basketball's back.
It's back, baby.
It's good.
Thank God.
We'll get a couple wins. We'll get a Orlando and a Chicago win, and we'll feel better. It just sucks to be the fucking green. Wait, the fucking cuss cries. They can change it up by putting a little green fucking racist Irishman all he wants in the middle of cuss cries. We know it's cuss cries. It's still cuss cries.
Now it looks like coos cries.
Doesn't matter. Cuss cries, you have committed to that. Just own it. You should be penalized for it. The league should have to intervene. What an embarrassment to the league that you're still saying cuss cries and trying to like tweak it to be like, no, it's more like this now. Now you get it. Now it's see us rise. That's nothing. That's nothing. Even if it was see us rise. What does that mean? It means nothing. That's not about anything. See us rise? What are you, a boner? It's stupid. Cuss cries. Bad. Get out of here. Penalize him. Kick him out.
I wish I could like sing the Seinfeld music after that version of you. That is definitely Seinfeld Mike. All right. We'll talk to you this weekend. Cuss cries. Are you down with TT?
Yeah, you know lick face.
We are the murderous pair. That with the jail and we murdered the murderers there. Then with the hell and discovered the devil delivered some hurt and despair. Used to have powder to push. Now I smoke pounds of the push. Holy, I'm burning the bush. Now I give a fuck about none of this shit. Two runner over and out of this bitch. Step into the spotlight. Copying of uppers and downers get done. I'm in a rush to be numb. Dropping 1,000 ain't much. Come from the clouds on a missile to turn.